Contributions of KZFR supporters and by A1 Brake and Alignment. They're specialists with over 20 years of experience in automotive care. A1 Brake and Alignment services all makes and models of cars, trucks, and off-road vehicles in all forms of automotive maintenance and repair, including air conditioning. A1 Brake and Alignment is located at 824 Nord Ave, and they can be reached at 894-1149. That's 894-1149. Talking about Practice Chico's only locally produced sports talk radio show starts right now.
We're talking about practice. Not a game, not a game, not a game. We're talking about practice. It's easy to sum it up. We just talk about practice. I mean, listen, we talking about practice. I mean, how silly is that? Man, we talking about practice. We talking about practice, man.
Yes, indeed, we are talking about practice. I'm your host, Jarrell Gilbert. Alongside me, producer extraordinaire, John Lucan. John, what's happening, brother?
What's going on, man?
Not too much, not too much. And filling in again, our man, DJ J-Pounds, Jordan Booth.
Clip City, Chip City. We in it, baby.
He is sporting a Clippers beanie, the only real-life Clippers fan
Clip
I've
City,
ever
Chip
met.
Clip City, Chip City.
We'll definitely get into the Clippers. The NBA season has finally started.
Yes, finally has really started.
It finally has started. We got all the bums and all the scrub teams up out of the paint, minus the Heat. I wish the Heat were still in, but that's okay. So we're going to get real heavy on some NBA hoops here, NBA playoffs. I want to talk a little bit on the back end. Marshawn Lynch finally found a home. He is returning to his home.
Beast mode.
So we're going to get into that. Cap still doesn't have a job. NHL playoffs. And all sorts of fun stuff. But as I said, we are going to be heavy on NBA playoffs. So I wanted to start with a few things that I just found funny. A couple of stats that were kind of, I don't know, one-off stats. So let's start there, and then we'll kind of dive into some of these games. So Mo Harkless plays for the Portland Trail Blazers, and this is just, this is amazing. I really, really enjoy this story. So Mo Harkless has a contract stipulation that if he shoots 35% from three during the regular season, he gets a bonus of $500,000. So with three games left in the season, Mo Harkless was shooting 35.1% from three, which meant that if he took two threes and missed both, that he would miss his bonus. So in the final three games of the season, Mo Harkless decided to take an astounding zero shots from three, which...
Smart man.
Yeah, I can respect the hustle. What was awesome is in yesterday's game, the first game after the regular season, first game of the postseason, the Trailblazers took on the Warriors, and Mo Harkless went 1 from 6 from three. So he's back stroking the ball. Best part about this story is after the game, he was seen at a Mexican restaurant with a lot of food and posted a picture on his Instagram with a caption that read, "Looks like dinner's on me," which is just amazing. I have nothing but respect for it. I can't hate on a guy trying to get his. Is it selfish? Absolutely. Would I be doing the same thing? Absolutely.
But, I mean, is it really selfish, though? I mean, their team already made the playoffs. So it wasn't like he needed to really show up in those last three games.
That's correct.
And he's not a three-point shooter.
So
definitely not a three-point shooter.
If... I think that's a good point, John. If they were still fighting for their playoff lives, this is a lot more of a selfish move, and I think it's viewed a lot differently. It's easy to be playful and kind of funny about it when there were no playoff implications, that they had the 8th seed wrapped up at that point. But I just thought this whole story was great, man. We talk so often on the show about people hustling backwards, and this is the antithesis of this. This guy was doing what he needed to do to be able to afford that nice Mexican dinner after a game one loss. So, also, I want to talk about Paul George. As many of you know, The Pacers fell to the Cavs by 1 point in game one in Cleveland. Paul George gave up the ball in the final possession to C.J. Miles, who took the final shot, which ended up obviously not going in, and they lost 109-108. After the game, Paul George was quoted as saying, "Everybody knows that I need to take the last shot." Paul George, also keep in mind, he's the one who passed the ball to C.J. Miles in that last possession. Paul George is also 0-for-15 when taking the last shot with less than 20 seconds on the clock to tie the game or go ahead. 0-for-15, but everyone knows that he's supposed to take the last shot. Good luck with that, Lakers. I just thought that was great. I thought the audacity of that to come out and say everyone knows I should take the last shot. There's a lot of Kobe in that statement.
Is there not a lot of truth and honesty in that statement? There is. As well?
I mean, who's better? Then again, C.J. Miles, you should be able, as that position in the NBA, you should be able to hit that shot. Game in, game out. Anyone should be able to hit that shot. Granted, it's open, semi-contested from Richard Jefferson, but you got to be able to make that shot. I see where Paul George is coming from, the frustration. I mean, he's had it all year with the Pacers, coming back from his injury. He's pretty much put his team on his back to get him where they are in the playoffs.
And he
was lights out that game. The last two possessions, you know, came up with two really big shots to put it within one.
And he was open.
But I just think that there was more underlining than just Paul George giving it up. You know, as far as coaching goes, I mean, they get the rebound right there after LeBron goes down to, I think, 2 or 3 seconds on the shot clock, right. Takes a ridiculous three like he usually does, misses, and Paul George gets the rebound with 20 seconds left. You have one timeout. I feel like with those two possessions that Paul George just had, you let him go up the court. You let him maybe ISO. You let him, you know, see what the defense, you know, is going to do, and then maybe you call your timeout. Or worst case scenario, Paul George takes a shot, they miss, they're down one, they can still foul and then time out, advance the ball. So
yeah, they brought the ball up kind of lackadaisical, which made no sense because Cleveland still had a foul to give, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
And they got that foul with about 10 seconds left, which if you put the ball in Paul George's hands, at the very least, I think any team would be more comfortable living or dying with what Paul George decides to do at the end of the game rather than C.J. Miles. But I honestly thought that last play, C.J. Miles put himself in a great position to win the game.
No, yeah, he did. I mean, that's a great shot, great take, good look.
Yeah, I mean, and he almost hit it. I mean, but, you know.
I mean, big hats off to Cleveland. Cleveland made a smart defensive play by doubling Paul George. That's the original reason he got rid of the ball. Anyway,
right.
LeBron comes off of C.J. Miles, or I think it's actually Lance Stevenson.
Yeah, he came off Stevenson.
Stevenson's underneath the paint, not in the position to get the ball at all. LeBron doubles him and then forces Paul George to pass it to C.J. Miles. Paul George does come open for a second, but C.J. Miles might have been hustling backwards, passing him the ball backwards when C.J. Miles is kind of already going towards the rim. So that's why he took the shot.
That's kind of what I was thinking was that, I mean, C.J. Miles had a better look. Paul George was having to, he was being guarded by LeBron at that point, and we're talking about playoff LeBron, which is a different defensive animal than he is in the regular season. And he's running away from the basket where CJ had just a better look. So, and even LeBron came out after the game and said, you know, I thought CJ did the right thing. That I thought Paul George made the right play by getting it out of his hands because he got doubled.
Yeah.
And any of us who have hooped, like, that's
right.
You've done your job correctly if you draw two and you kick the ball out. Yeah. If you've drawn two players, you have an advantage somewhere. And so by moving the ball, you are that much more likely to find the open man. So I don't know. I thought the whole thing was kind of funny. And it's just fun to tease Paul George about the 0-for-15. But at the end of the day, I don't think it's a big deal. And you said, do you have an update for us, John? Can you grab an update real quick on that score? Because it was close at halftime, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of running away. It started the third. It's 72-63. Cavs.
Pacers. Oh, Cavs. Yeah. Okay, so
Cavs went on a little bit of a run. Halftime, it was within four, so.
Let's go, LBJ.
Yeah, I thought the Pacers really needed that game.
It'd been a hell of one to get.
Yeah, split was definitely a must.
They really need a split going back if they really want a chance. But we'll get more into the Cavs and Pacers series here in a bit. Also, did you guys see Kyle Lowry the other day? He went 0-for-6 from 3, and I'm starting to wonder, is there kind of a, I don't want to say a mental frailty, because these guys are all so much more talented than I ever was, but It's almost like there's something that gets in his head when it comes to the playoffs. Because if you'll remember, last year he really struggled from the field during the first couple rounds. And even in that Eastern Conference finals against the Cavs after one of the games, if you guys will remember, he was sitting there taking shots for like an hour and a half after the game, trying to regain his stroke, trying to regain his confidence. And I really like Kyle Lowry as a player, but I'm just wondering if there's something about Kyle Lowry that's just he gets too much if the pressure gets to him or what it is, because that doesn't...
Yeah, it's weird. If you really look at... It's game ones for him. You know, I feel like it's that get off for him. It's every game one in a playoff series, he has just a dismal performance where he's really just an obsolete non-factor, you know? And I feel like that just kind of sets the tone for him for every series. It kind of, I don't know if he's an emotional player or what it is, but I feel like he's getting into his own head in that kind of regard.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it just seems weird that a player with Kyle Lowry's game, because he has a game that transfers to the playoffs, because he's not just a jump shooter. He could get to the rack. He's kind of got a wider, thicker body, which is usually good for point guards because they're usually smaller guys, and he can go and bang with the bigger guys. He can post up. And so those are things that translate when the game slows down. He's been traditionally really well at shooting wide open threes. And I think the game was yesterday. It might have been the day before.
Saturday.
It was Saturday. Okay. Mm-hmm. But he was terrible. The Raptors looked terrible in that second half. Serge Ibaka completely disappeared. And Milwaukee just kind of blew him out at home, which was, I don't know if it was super surprising, because the Raptors tend to struggle early on in series and stretch series out that you wouldn't think would be stretched out.
Definitely.
But
anytime a team that's got a primary point guard with Dellavedova and gets a blowout deciding win in playoffs is a surprising thing to me.
Agreed.
So, I mean, Dellavedova is a defensive juggernaut now, though. Yeah. Defensively, he does his job. He works his ass off out there.
Oh,
defensively, his jumper is hideous.
Yeah, it's terrible. But he's got a signature shoe, so there's that.
Yeah, don't call that to New Zealand.
He does, yeah.
Oh, Aussie.
The deli.
Aussie's got the shoes.
It's crazy. And I think they go for the same amount as Steph Curry. So there's.
I mean, because Steph Curry got those clean the kitchen fives. And, anybody trying to pay $200 for those?
The Air Republican threes.
Yeah. The scrub the toilet bowl threes.
Yeah, no.
That's cold.
They're not. They're definitely
My dad loves his shoes, so you take that back.
They're definitely not. Let's just put it this way. Jordan and I are not in the target demo. You know
what I'm saying? That's not for
us. Yeah, no. The other thing I wanted to touch on that I just found hilarious was, finally, Joe Johnson is on the Jazz. Who knew?
Joe Johnson's still in the league.
I saw Joe.
He's still getting buckets, at least against the Clippers. He kind of dismantled the Clippers yesterday.
Ooh, something like it.
Gobert went down in the first 17 seconds?
First possession.
Very first possession.
Yeah. So let's go there for a second. I wanted to get into the Clippers later, but first, Joe Johnson still alive and well, getting big buckets in the playoffs, miraculously. But the Clippers, man, this is... You're a Clippers fan. I'll let you speak on it, but my real quick thought is this was surprising. I thought this would go five or six, but I thought the Clippers would handle a much less experienced playoff team. Most of these guys are in their first playoff series, where the Clippers have been there every year for the last 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So what's going on with your squad, bro?
So big shout out to my man ISO Joe, man, one of the best ISO players to ever do it in the last 15, 20 years. So,
agreed.
Man, yeah, hats off to him for that. That role was a little lucky though, Joe. I will say that. Honestly, the Jazz are just a perfect matchup for us. We struggle guarding wing players, and Utah has an abundance of wing scorers.
Yeah,
and you know, anybody in the 6'5", the 6'7" range, we just can't guard.
Yep.
So if you have four players, Ingles, Rodney Hood, Alec Burks, you know, people of the height and skill, Hayward, Joe Johnson, we just usually cannot guard that type of player. So, you know, game closing situation. Jamal Crawford, of course, is on ISO Joe. ISO Joe does what he does.
Why do you think that being ISO Joe, why do you think that Doc didn't have something written up like the Cavs almost did? You know, double him up the way he's doing. I mean, coming off the bench doing 31 minutes, you got to think that he's going to get that ball. I mean, Hayward looked for the ball, but I mean, it was all Joe Johnson in the last second. Why don't you think they tunnel up there?
I mean, first, I feel like it's just a big difference between doubling Paul George and doubling Joe Johnson.
Yeah.
Nobody comes out of a timeout saying we're going to double Joe and get the ball out of Joe Johnson's hands at this point in his career. You know, and for, it was unfortunate for us. I don't think it's going to happen again. I still have hope that we're going to win the series. But, you know, Joe got us. He got us last night.
Yeah, you know, I think you bring up a really, really, really good point there. It's solid because the Clippers do really struggle guarding the wings. And a lot of talk has been made about the Warriors and Clippers, what once was a rivalry and how that's kind of disappeared. And the Warriors have really owned that rivalry. But the thing that isn't discussed, it's not like the Clippers suddenly fell off and were garbage. Ever since Steve Kerr came to the Warriors and he changed that offense, and because if you remember when Mark Jackson was coaching that team, they were playing inside out, which was probably the dumbest way you could play when you have Steph Curry and Klay Thompson in the same backcourt. Once Steve Kerr got there, he spread the floor. He just got every wing player in the league. If you're 6'5 and above, you can find, and you can shoot even moderately well, you can find a spot on this Warriors team. And so he just loaded the Warriors up, made them play to their strengths, and that's what I thought the biggest difference has been. And I think the biggest detriment or the biggest stain on, I guess, Doc Rivers' tenure with the Clippers, I would say, is the fact that since he's been there, he has done very little in the way of finding a solid three guard.
Yeah.
I think Danny Granger was picking up some minutes there. Paul Pierce was getting some minutes.
Farouk Aminu.
Right.
We've had Lance Stevenson. We've drafted. We've had Reggie Bullock. We've had so many people in Doc's tenure at that three spot.
And it's just
Matt
not,
Barnes. It's been horrendous. It's never been a solid player. And until that happens, I feel like that's what's separating us from being a top-tier contender.
Yeah, because, I mean, the Warriors definitely leapfrogged the Clippers because the Clippers were really kind of tailor-made that year following the whole debacle with Donald Sterling. They were really kind of tailor-made to make a deep run, and obviously, you know, the Warriors went crazy that season and won the championship. But the Clippers were really kind of the next up in the Western Conference. After the Spurs were done winning all their championships, it seemed with Chris Paul, DeAndre Jordan, and Blake Griffin that they had the foundation to really be that next dominant force out of the West, and we just haven't seen it. And if the Clippers continue to play like this, they're going to cost Doc Rivers his job there.
Yeah, I think they will blow up the front office before they actually blow up the team. That's my opinion as well. So if they do lose to Utah, Doc Rivers is out of there, or at least the GM or somebody in the front office, like they're going to turn that over.
I heard something this morning on ESPN Radio. It was really interesting about the thought of Doc Rivers leaving before they get a chance to fire. You know, to leave a year early and go to rebuild somewhere else, Magic, go somewhere to where he can kind of do his magic. Because I feel like the way the veterans are set, it's like you said, he's been there for so long. I don't feel like he's changed anything of that dynamic. It's still the same three that we've seen, but can't get over the hump of the wing. So
yeah, I think that's where his failure's been. I think he's been a pretty decent coach. I think where his failure's been is really building that team up and getting that supporting cast, because you think with the core like DeAndre Jordan, Chris Paul, and Blake Griffin, who have all been perennial all-stars since coming into the league, basically, you have the foundation, like I was saying, to really build a championship team, and that's where he's kind of failed. And we were talking about this a few weeks on the show, but Jordan, I don't think you were here. I'd like to hear what your thoughts are on this. We were talking about whether you should blow up that core of players, like we were talking about this offseason, because Chris Paul's contract's up, Blake Griffin's contract's up. And my point was no, because they figured out the hard part is getting the superstar talent. You know, now they need to figure out the other part, which is building around that superstar talent. But being a Clippers fan, what are your thoughts with potential offseason moves whenever the offseason does begin for the Clippers?
I feel as though we should consider blowing it up. You know what I'm saying? If the deal is right, honestly, I don't feel like the market for Chris Paul would ever be, at this point in his career, is going to be high.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I feel like he mean more to us than anybody else. So
Agreed. Why
get rid of Chris Paul? Mm-hmm. If anybody's a logical moving piece, it's probably Blake, because Blake is still young. Who wouldn't want Blake Griffin? It just depends on what you get back for him. I was spitballing the idea of Blake for Carmelo.
Yep.
And Blake for Carmelo, and then we get something as well as like a pick or something, just because Carmelo's a little bit older.
Right.
And I feel like the spacing would be great. DeAndre could get a little bit more work to do what he does down low, even though he's not a great down low player, but he could learn with more space and more time to, you know, actually be a post-up player. And Melo could just do his thing, which is score.
But Melo doesn't play defense, so you need that wing defender. Who are you gonna? You need to have that.
If Melo wants to win, he's gonna have to play some D.
That's true.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? This is his first chance to really win something. So
I think
if
the last time he played defense, he was on Syracuse. So.
And they play zone, he did. So he definitely didn't play no D.
And zones for cowards. I'll say it every time. You know, I don't have a problem with that move at all. I was actually kind of wanting to see that.
But it doesn't make sense for the Knicks. Unless they move Blake again or move somebody because they got Porzingis.
Well, yeah, the Knicks are in complete rebuild mode at this point. Well, let's talk about the Knicks because the Knicks have just been a comedy of errors all season long. And what kind of went down over the past since we did the show last, Phil Jackson came out and had a press conference and basically said, yeah, we're still looking to trade Carmelo. And kind of put it in terms of Carmelo should want to go somewhere where he's going to win because we're not going to win for a while. Porzingis didn't go to the exit interview, which is interesting. And then beyond that, Michelle Roberts, who I don't know if she's the head of the NBA Players Association. She's some high muckety-muck in the Players Association, came out and said Phil Jackson needs to knock that off because basically if a player comes out and says that they want to go and openly campaigns to be traded and go to another team, the team can actually find the player and sue the player, which is interesting. And basically, Phil Jackson's doing that, but he's not a player, so it's kind of the same thing. But what a disaster that's been all year. I do think that Carmelo would be in his best interest to leave at this point.
Yeah. I think Carmelo deserves everything that's happening right now.
He's not going to get a ring if he stays. I get the reason. It's Phil Jackson's fault in itself. He's the one that gave him the no trade clause
and the extension.
It's like why complain now? But I feel like the only thing Phil Jackson's really doing in this situation is just trying to bait him, you know, trying to take him off to the point where he's like, you know what, screw this, I am going to go. And then Phil Jackson behind closed doors is going to be like, yes,
right,
you know, like finally. You
and
know,
it almost seems like Carmelo's staying there out of a point
out of spite,
out
right?
Of spite,
he's
right.
Like, oh, you want to get rid of me? Oh, you're going to stick with me for the next 3 years.
I think he doesn't want to look dumb because I mean that summer when he originally could have left, he could have made some good decisions. Now
yep.
He could have went to a couple good teams. He could have went to to the Bulls with Derrick Rose before his knee blew out,
mm-hmm.
and that could have been a hell of a team. He could have went. He could have went where else? He could have went to Miami, I think. He could have went he could have went to a host of other teams that would have been way better than the Knicks. Now, granted, when he did go to the Knicks, that first 3 years they were pretty good.
Right.
Yeah, they were knocking on the door of
plus he has,
being
you know,
contender.
Outside, you know, family, his boys are getting bigger, you know, he's raising them and he's a New York kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
kind
so
of.
That
he's
Baltimore. Baltimore kid.
Yeah, Baltimore, but same general
yeah,
area.
He was
and
born
his
in
wife
New York.
Is a celebrity, so
right, yeah,
New York's
right.
a good hub
from
for
New
her.
York, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, it makes sense, but
I feel it's kind of funny. I feel like everyone deserves everything that's happening there. Like you just mentioned, Carmelo is the one who decided, you know, I have other opportunities to go elsewhere and play for a better team, and I'm not going to do that. And New York decided, hey, we'll take an aging superstar who's still very effective. He's still a really
right.
good player.
Mm-hmm.
So let's not get that point kind of lost in all this. He's still a really solid player, but Carmelo chose to be there, and New York chose to extend him 5 years, and they chose to give him that no-trade clause. So when I hear Phil Jackson kind of whining more or less about, oh, you know, he should want to get... I mean, we heard it all year long. Phil Jackson was openly campaigning to get Carmelo up out of there. But I just feel like they all kind of deserve each other, and this mess is perfect for the Knicks. The Knicks have been... more or less a disastrous franchise since 2001, I believe. And it's tough because I got a lot of family in New York, and New Yorkers love basketball. Like, as a state...
What's the hub?
Yeah,
the
as
hub
a state... It's the Mecca. Right. I mean, when they talk about, you know, those fans really know hoop, I mean, they really understand hoop there, where a lot of other NBA arenas, you get, you know...
MVP chants.
You get jazz fans.
For the away players...
Right,
yeah.
Right, which happened in Brooklyn, which is weird. but Brooklyn, they're all new. They're just
happy to be there.
Yeah, they're just happy that they have
hipsters.
It's just a bunch of hipsters that are happy that they got something to do on a Tuesday night. But so before we'll go into break here in a second, but before we do that, Something that was I found pretty difficult emotionally to watch was Isaiah Thomas, a couple hours before their game tipped off, found out that his 22-year-old little sister died in a car accident, which is obviously tragic. And there's not much light I could shed on that part. But what I did want to talk about was kind of the reaction. Charles Barkley came out and was fairly critical of TNT showing that. And I think his point was a little lost. I'm paraphrasing because I don't have the quote in front of me. But he just said, that made me really uncomfortable. I don't think I could play after that. You know, that makes me really uncomfortable. I don't think he should play. And some people took that as, you know, Charles Barkley trying to tell Isaiah Thomas how to grieve. And grief is one of those things, in my opinion, that there is no right way to do it. We all do it in different forms and fashions. I've lost people and immediately started crying that were close to me. I've lost people and it didn't hit me till a year or two later that they were gone, you know, and I kind of broke down. I've lost people and, you know, immediately felt some joy because of their certain situation. So I just think, you know, we all handle it different. So I think anyone to criticize the way someone grieves is kind of dumb. And I don't know that necessarily Charles was doing that. I think he was saying more about how he felt. But we talk about this a couple weeks ago when players, Torrey Smith comes to mind, Brett Favre comes to mind. They have a personal tragedy in their life where they lose a really close family member and then they come out and ball out. Now, that wasn't the case for Isaiah Thomas. I don't have his numbers in front of me right now, but he played okay. Chicago kind of smothered him.
He had 30, though.
Yeah, I mean, he still got his, but, yeah. You know, he didn't go insane. He didn't go for 45 or something crazy. But, yeah, no, he got his. He played well. But I don't know. I thought that whole situation, that was pretty heartbreaking to watch, man, because any of us who have siblings, or, I mean, I just think anyone with a heart and a heartbeat can understand or empathize with someone who finds out that they lost a sibling in such tragic circumstances, especially when they're so young. But I just thought the whole thing, it was kind of interesting to see all the emotion. Then he still came out, and he did play well, like you mentioned.
Yeah, played really well. I feel bad for, I mean, it trickles down to the entire team when something happens like that. You know what I mean? I mean, everyone's thrown off their game.
Yeah.
They don't want to, you know, that's their best player. That's their key player. They don't want to wrench him in the wrong way or set him off. So there's definitely that discourse. You could see that with their play. I mean, you know, he's going off for 30, I think, 6 assists, 5 rebounds. Had a game, but everyone else is missing shots. So it's really tough to see, you know, him play well and then everyone else not really be able to pick up the slack for him,
which is ultimately, in my opinion, going to be the downfall of the Celtics. They have one superstar, as we know, and their superstar happens to only be 5'9", and they just don't. Who's the other guy who's going to take a big shot? Who's the other guy who's going to create for themselves? Right. They don't have a lot of. They have a lot of shot makers. They don't have a lot of shot creators on that team. And I think ultimately, whether it's Chicago that gets them in the first round, ultimately, that will, in my opinion, be their undoing, is they just don't have enough firepower of people who could come in and just create their own shot. So we'll see. Plenty of basketball left in that series, but Chicago came out and took a surprising, well, to some folks, surprising 1-0 lead. Dwayne Wade, Father Time blocked his shot when he was trying to dunk. That made my heart hurt a little bit. I've been always